Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Vav Amud Aleph, three lines down. Tanya Kavatei deRava. We have a braita that supports Rava's contention. We ended up yesterday with Rava's Kal Vachomer, by which he taught us that there is a din of Mishkav and Moshav by a nidah mi'et le'et retroactively, and that we already had seen from Ze'iri, who had said that mi'et le'et shebidina osa Mishkav and Moshav le'tamei adam le'tamei bigadim, and Rava brought us a Kal Vachomer in order to explain that through Kli Cheres, which is Mukaf Tzamid Batil, which can be saved in Olam Eit, is not saved by a Nida. Kal Vachomer, Mishkav Moshav, which has no protection in Olam Eit, certainly it should be affected by a Nida, Me'et La'et, retroactively. And we ended off with the Breita from Abyimi Mebe Chozai, that similarly indicated that there was only Tumat Maga, not Tumat Mishkav Moshav. Or the Tumat Mishkav Moshav was limited to Tumat Maga, which would have been a Rishon, the Tumanat, and Ava Tumah, the Tamei Adam, the Tamei Begadim. And we reconciled that with saying that it was Maga Atzma, Tumat Maga of the woman herself, not Tumat Maga where she touched a Kli, and then someone came into contact with that Kli. So now we have Tanya Kavotei deRava, we have a Braita that supports Rava, Haru'ed Dam. So if one has a sighting of Dam, Mitam'a Mi'et Le'et, as we've seen until now, there is retroactive Tumah, with regards to this, is the Shita of the Chachamim. Umahi mitama. What are the items or issues that are affected by this Tumah retroactively? Mishkavot umoshavot. So here you have Mishkan v'moshav mentioned, which would be supportive of Rava's contention. Ochlim umashkim. Food items, drinks. Ukli cheres amukaf tzamid patil. And a kli cheres that is totally sealed up, that also is affected by this Tumah retroactively. Now, the reason that it's affected by it retroactively, as Rashi says over here, is because of the fact that Heset, Hazav, or Vanida, Mitamim Klicheres, they are effective at being Mitame Klicheres, which is not true by other types of conveyance of Tumah. And that's because, as we noted yesterday, Klicheres can only be Mikabel Tumah Mitocho, internally, it cannot be Mikabel Tumah Migabo, from the outside. That's why in Olam Eit, it's protected when it has a Tzamid Patil on a lab, when it has a seal on top of it, then there is no way for the Tumah to access that which is inside, and the Kli Cheres remains Tahor in Olam Eit. The other hand, Heset has a unique feature, which is that Tumat Heset comes from the fact that when you move it, you shake it, or you cause any motion in the object, we consider it as if you touch the entirety of the object. And since over here, you have touched the entirety of the object, including externally and internally. So therefore, that negiyah internally is what makes the kli cheres tamei, even though it has its amid tamei patil alav, and even though it is not tamei in an olam eit, it will be tamei when there is tumat heset. We discussed yesterday the Baal Yeh Tosafot's question as to why that is. We learned in the Gemara in Chulin that if there is no tumat maga, there is no tumat heset, because Tumat Heset is a derivative of Tumat Maga. And over here, you can't have Tumat Maga because of Tzamid Patil, because of the seal that is on top of it. The Tosafot and the Gemara in Shabbat differentiates between this and other Kli Cheres, where the Kli Cheres has a narrow top to it, where you can't get yourself inside of it. It's so narrow, it's so small, that a person can't touch that which is inside. Over there is no Tumat Heset, because there is no Tumat Maga, because that is a permanent state. There will never be any Tumat Maga. Over here, by Tzamid Patil, since the seal is made to be opened, or it will eventually be opened, and it is made to be broken, there, that is not considered to be a lack of Tumat Maga. Since in the future, there will be Maga with this Kli Cheres, so now the Heset does have impact on it. And that's why here, a Kli Cheres Mukaf Tzamid Patil is affected by a Nida, Mi'et Le'et, retroactively, through Tumat Heset. See here that there are Mishkavot Umoshavot that are infected by this Tumat Nida retroactively. Ve'ena Mikukelet Leminyana. And it doesn't ruin her count. We assume whenever she cited the Dam, that's when she began her count for Nida. And that starts the cycle of 7 days of Tumat Nida, and then 11 days of Yemei Ziva. So she can assume the day that she saw was the first day of her count, and therefore she has now the 18 days, 7 days of Nida, 11 days of Yemei Ziva, and then she would be open to a Petach L'Nida, the possibility of having to restart her count as a Nida. Ve'ena mitamat bo'ala l'mafreya. She does not affect her husband retroactively. That is because otherwise, according to most, you'd have a problem of the libo nokfo, or the husband being reluctant to be together with his wife, because now there's a risk that he's going to be affected by the tumah retroactively and be considered a boel nida. Now over here, it might be what the difference is between boel lemafreya and the other tumot. One is the issue of priria or rivia, but the other issue might be that there are two dinim and nida, as we've seen all along. And nida is a din of tumah, which has to do with tarot, which is that she has the impact of being mitamei items. There's also a separate din, which is that an isha nida has an isur to be together, to cohabitate with her husband. That's an isur erva. It happens to be that we speak about them together in one shot, but maybe they really are two separate dinim. There's one din of tumah and tara. There's another din of erva. And the tumah that is associated with one who is boel and nida, in the Torah it says that one who's boel and nida basically takes on the properties of the nida. They become like the nida themselves, and they have a high level of tumah that they're affected by. So that's an issue of tumah and tara. So if issues of tumah and tara are applicable retroactively, why don't we say that with regards to boalah, that's also impactful? The answer to that might be that the tumat boalah is associated with the isur erva, or the isur of bi'ah. So therefore, when it comes to issues that are purely tumah issues, those have impact, have impact retroactively. On the other hand, when you're dealing with issues of bi'ilah, over there, the chachamim never instituted any restrictions retroactively, likely because otherwise it would prevent piriyah riviyah. The husband would be reluctant to be together with his wife because of the risks that it would be considered a problem retroactively. Therefore, the chachamim did not institute it. When they didn't institute this restriction retroactively on the husband, that means that also the tumat bo'alah also did not come along with it, because that is a package that comes together. So that's why we are separating or differentiating between different forms of tumat, that some forms of tumah have application retroactively, other forms of tumah do not, and that may be because they're connected to a different issue of nida. They're not connected to the issue of tumah tara, they're connected to the issue of isur erva. So if you correlate the two, that the tumat bo'ala is correlated with the isur bia, then over here where there's no isur bia, there's also no issue of tumat bo'ala. So that's not necessarily a given, that's a machloket in the Rishonim, as to whether the two are correlated. But if you do correlate them, it makes it easier to understand why this would have been accepted from the dinim of tumah lemafreya. Rabbi Kiva omer, mitama et bo'ala. And obviously Rabbi Kiva believes that it is a different din, that the two are not correlated. And that is that even though the isur biyah does not apply retroactively, but the tumat bo'ala does apply retroactively. Ve'ena mona elamisha shirata. And her account only starts from the time that she had a sighting. Even though there's retroactive tumah, that doesn't mean we assume that the sighting happened beforehand, so that now she counts her 7 days of tumah starting from a day earlier. She starts from the time that she had a ri'iyah, she had a sighting of dam. So that's all with regards to haro'eh dam. Haro'ah ketem stain mitamah demafreya. Once again, there is tumah retroactively. Here, it does not use me'et le'et, it says the mafreya. We already saw before that there are differences amongst the Rishonim as to how far back that goes. Rashi says the Mafreya goes back to the last time it was kibbutz, last time it was laundered. Rambam says until the last time it was checked. There is a Rashba that's quoted that says that it's made late, that it's similar to any other retroactive tumah, that it's only 24 hours. But seemingly from the differentiation of language here between the Roed Dam is mitamah me'et, and over here it's mitamah lemafreya, makes it sound that there is a distinction between them. And the reason that you would have a distinction or a difference has to do with the fact that a stain, especially if it's dry, is indicative of something happening much earlier. It's not like when you have a ri'iyah, where biologically there's a limited amount of time retroactively where the blood could have left the uterus, because it cannot only be held up inside the vaginal canal for a certain amount of time. So we assume that that's 24 hours. To say that it was there for a week doesn't make so much sense. On the other hand, when you're dealing with a stain could have been there for a duration of time and unbeknownst to the individual. They didn't see it. They didn't notice it. And therefore, you could have the possibility that this is indicative of a sighting that took place a long time ago. And therefore, the mafreya over here has a much longer tail to it than it does with regards to a pure ri'iyah. Mumahi mitama. And again, what is the tuma that's generated the mafreya? Ochlim umashkim. She affects ochel mashke mishkavot umoshavot. Once again, it has impact on mishkav and moshav, which is supportive of Rava's contention that there is this retroactive tuma that's associated with mishkav and moshav, which was the statement of Zi'iri. But we also see klicheres and mukav tzamid batil, that the klicheres that is sealed over is affected by a nida and is affected retroactively, which is the premise for Rava's kal v'chomer. Umukulkelet the minyana. Over here, as opposed to in the other case, it does ruin her count. In the first instance, we said that she is on a regular count now. She has 7 days of nida, 11 days of tumat ziva, and then she goes to a reset. If she has sightings after that, she starts a new cycle of nida. But over here, we say she's mikul kelet, that she doesn't know when she began the count. And that means she doesn't know if she's now 1 day, 3 days, 4 days into her nida, 7 day period of nida, and therefore she doesn't know when her Yemei Ziva begin. She doesn't know where her Yemei Ziva begin. She doesn't know when her next possible nida could begin again, and therefore you lose the count. And the only way to get out of it is to do Shiva Nikim, to have 7 days of no sighting, and then you can be sure that you've now started or restarted a cycle. It is the Mishnah that we saw in Arachin, which is the very difficult Mishnah, when a woman loses her count, how to come back or how to rectify that situation and to know that she's now restarted her petach lit nida. And that's what's going to happen here because she's mukukelet leminyana. The difference again being the nature of a sighting. If you have a sighting that is a flow of dam, once again there's a tuma lemafreya with regards to kodoshim, maybe even truma with regards to taharot. But that's it. We don't assume that there was some sort of ri'yah beforehand. We assume there's a chezka tara of the woman, and therefore the sighting is the first moment where she becomes tmeah. By a ketem, that is not true. By a ketem, we know for certain she's tmeah in the past. And that's because the ketem is indicative that something happened in the past. It's not indicative that something happened now. It's indicative that something happened previous to now. If that's the case, then we know retroactively there's got to be tuma there. And since there's Vaday Tuma retroactively, that also makes an impact on the Minyan. And so that's why we consider here to have her Minyan Mikulkelet. Umetama et Boala. And now this also means that retroactively, if she had slept with her husband, we're going to assume that the husband now is considered or classified as a Boel Nida. Because, again here, we're assuming that the Minyan might have started earlier. If the Minyan started earlier, then the restriction is not simply a retroactive institution, midrabanan. It's, if you believe ketamim are only midrabanan, like Rashi said earlier, then it's an indication that there probably was something more serious earlier. There was a flow that came out earlier, and therefore her minyan already started. She was already a classified nida back then. Veinu mona elamisha shirata. And she still only begins her count for nida from the time she identifies the ketem, meaning that only from that time forward is she considered or classified where she counts the 7 days of nida, and then the 11 days of yemi ziva, but she still will have to then recover from that if she has subsequent sightings based on the Mishnah in Arachin. Tosafot says here that isn't it pshita that she has to count from the shata ketem or the shat ri'iyah? What is the chiddush that the Gemara is bringing? You can't go retroactively to Zman HaKibbutz because he has no idea when that was. So Tosafot says that the case here, Mayri Shirata Yom Echad Ubet Yomim Machar Metziat HaKetem. She actually had an actual sighting a day or two after she found the ketem. And that Moneh Mishat Riata is not from the time you found the ketem, but rather from the time that you had Riata Dam. And that's what it means from Mishat Riata, from the actual sighting of Dam, not from the Zman HaKetem. That obviously is a Chiddush, because you're not starting from the moment you found the Ketem, but rather from the actual Riyot that you had after that point in time.
V'zeh v'zeh tolin v'lo ochlin v'lo surfin. All of these Tumot that we're speaking about here are not Tumot Vadait, Ella, it's Tumami Safek. And therefore, if we render Tarot as being Tumayot, then we will be toled them. We wait until they go bad or other tumah touches them, but we don't eat them, but we don't burn them until we're certain there is tumah over here. So now the Gemara writes to understand the Braita is clearly supportive of Rava, but the Rava, Ishmele Matanita, if he was aware of the Braita, Lema Matanita, why didn't he just quote the Braita? Vilo Shmele Matanita, if he never heard the Braita, Kalvachomer Minole, how can he create this Kalvachomer? Now that's not such a great question, because a Kalvachomer is a logical argument, and Rava has the ability and the right to argue that there is a Kalvachomer over here. So Rashi explains that the reason that he needs the Braita to create the Kalvachomer is because the Kalvachomer is premised on an idea that Tumat Heset of Mi'et Le'et impacts on a Tzamid Patil. So how did Rava know that the Takanat Chachamim was also applicable Mi'et Le'et retroactively to a Kli Cheres that would Tzamid Patil? How did he know that that was the case? His Kalvachomer is premised on that being a given. The given is that if a woman retroactively had Heset with a Kli Cheres that was Tzamid Patil, that Kli Cheres is Tameh. That fact is something that is needed for the underlying Kalvachomer that Rava uses. And the Braita tells us that, but Rava didn't know the Braita. Minole, where did he know that base information to build his Kalvachomer on? So the Mara says, Olam Shmiele Matanita. He was aware of the Braita. Vime Matanita, if it was from the Braita, Avamina, O Adam, O Bigadim. I would have thought the level of Tumah that is generated over here, yes, is a level of Tumah, that is, an Avatumah contacting something and making them Tameh, because Adam and Kelim can only become Tameh from an Avatumah, not from a Rishon the Tumah. So I would agree that these retroactive Tumot are effective Mishkav Moshav to make it that it is an Avatumah, and that Avatumah will then convey Tumah to an Adam or to Bigadim. Aval Adam Ubigadim Lo. But I would not have thought that it has the power to act like a Mishkav Moshav, where we know for certain that it is Tameh. There, a Mishkav Moshav, if you come into contact with the Mishkav, not only as the individual comes into contact with it, all the clothing that he's wearing becomes Tameh, even though they never came into contact with the Mishkav or Moshav. So that Chumrah is what Rava is entering or adding for us, which is Mishum Hachi Kamar Kavachomer. That's what he brings the Kavachomer to show. The Kavachomer is trying to show us what is meant by Mishkav and Moshav in the Braita. The Braita gives us all the information. It gives us the information of the Kli Cheres Tzamid Patil, that retroactively it is Tameh from Tumat Heset of a Nida. That's the base of the Kavachomer. That's given to us. Braita also gives us that Mishkav and Moshav is Tameh. The only question is, what type of Tumah are we talking about when there's a Mishkav and Moshav? So what Rava does is he builds the Kavachomer out of the information in the Braita to show us that the Mishkav and Moshav that's mentioned in the Braita is a full-fledged Mishkav and Moshav, which means it has Tumah the Mafreya, obviously a Takanat Rabbanan, but that Tumah is a Tumah that is effective at conveying Tumah to an Adam, and that Adam's Bigadim will be Tameh, even though they never came into contact with the Mishkav and Moshav. Or in essence, it's full-fledged Tumat Mishkav u'Moshav, and that's what Rava's Chiddush or addition is on top of the Braita. Tosfot asks over here, wait a minute, how can you say that Rav is adding this information to the Braita in order to reconcile with the Braita that Avime brought, where we said Mishkav and Moshav is like Maga'a? There are only two forms of Maga'a that it could be. It could be that she came into contact with the Kli, and we're speaking about that Kli. Well, that Kli is only Mitameh as a Rishon Netumah, Kli Mashkim, not Adam Ubigadim. Or we're speaking about direct contact, Maga'a of the Nida herself, whereby we said that it's Mitameh Adam Kelim, and even an Adam with his Kelim on it, with his Bigadim on him. And so if those are the two paradigms, then the Braita has to explain one of those two. And if we're saying Mishkav and Moshav is at the level of Negiyah of Adam and Bigadim, which means it's an Avatumah, that means that it's also going to be Mitameh Adam in Bigadim. And so then what's the Chiddush of Rava? Elim, can you say that's exactly what Rava is teaching us, that the Braita here has to be saying that Mishkav and Moshav is full-fledged Mishkav and Moshav, that's Mitameh Adam and Mitameh Bigadim, in order to reconcile with that Braita of Avime. But the Tosfot does leave that as a Tzarechion. Now we have a qualification of this idea of retroactive Tumah, which Rav Huna is going to make a statement, and the Gemara is going to challenge that for the rest of today's daf, which is Amar Rav Huna, Neit Eit Shebid Nida L'Kodesh Avalo L'Tumah. That retroactive Tumah by a Nida is only applicable to issues of Kodesh. It applies in the world of Kodesh. It does not apply in the world of Tumah. Until now, we assumed that it applied to all things that were not chulin, mitruma, kodesh, anything that wasn't chulin, that's a higher level of kedusha. We assumed there that this retroactive tumah had implications for it. Now Rav Huna is narrowing that and saying it's only by kodesh, not even by truma, that there is retroactive tumah. Ihochi. So if that is a distinction between kodesh and truma, litne gabi ma'alot, then why isn't it written in the Mishnayot in Chagiga? Mishnayot and Chagiga basically compare and contrast kodesh to truma. Chomer b'kodesh mi b'truma. It has explanations of what things are more stringent by kodesh than by truma. This would have been one of those examples, yet it's not mentioned in the Mishnayot in Chagiga, where it says, Ki kani hecha di'itle drora d'tuma, that what was written in the cases of Chagiga are only instances where there is a drora d'tuma. Now, drora d'tuma, similar to drora d'memona, is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to what the meaning is. Rashi says over here that drora d'tuma means that there's an existing safek tuma. So since there's an existing safek tuma, then when there's either a din derabbanan or a psak that would differentiate kodesh from truma, that's what's mentioned in the Mishnayot in Chagiga. But lacking or absent a drora d'tuma, we wouldn't say that. Avahecha delaytle drora d'tuma. In a place where there's no safek tuma, lo toni, it's not written. So our case here of me'et le'et, this retroactive tuma by the nida, is all an institution midrabanan. As far as we're concerned, she saw the dam today. That's when she became tmeah. She had a cheskat tara until this point. Even those that disagree with Shammai, who says that dayah shata, that it's only prospective tuma, they all agree that the retroactive tuma is only an institution midrabanan. It's a sayag. It's not as if that there is a real safek tuma retroactively. And so since there's no retroactive safek over here, therefore, whatever is instituted is an institution derabbanan. And according to Rashi, that's what doesn't belong in the Mishnayot in Chagiga, because Chagiga is only speaking about things that are safek, that differentiates the outcome for Kodesh and Truma. Well, here it's not a safek. It's just an institution midrabbanan, and that's why it's not found in the Mishnayot in Chagiga. Tosafot disagrees with that explanation of Rashi, and that is because, as we've seen earlier, the whole institution of Mi'et Li'et is because there's a likelihood or a high possibility that the dam that's exiting from the woman now did not just come out of her uterus. It went out of the uterus at an earlier point in time, and it took time for it to move from the entrance of the uterus to the entrance of the woman. And that delay is why we say there is tuma v'mafreya, and that delay is related to a safek. And so Tosfot says, I don't think that you can argue that there is no safek tuma over here. So the Balei Tosafot over here explains drora de tuma is that we don't demand of her to separate away from the taharot. There is a possibility that you could have instituted a harchaka whereby a woman could not engage or deal with taharot because there's a possibility she might see dam. And since we don't know when that sighting is going to come, maybe she shouldn't be involved in taharot at all. So that would be a case of drora de tuma, where since there is an expectation of tuma, there is a chashash of tuma that we take on lechatchila, that's where the Mishnayot deal with the difference between kodesh and tuma. Over here, where we make no demand on the woman to separate away and not deal with taharot, there is no drora de tuma. There's no expected tuma over here. Even though we do expect her to see it, there's no implications of that expectation. And it's only once she has a sighting that we worry about the safek retroactively. So that's how the Balei Tosafot explained drora de tuma. Drora de tuma is a case where we are aware and preventative measures. We force you to separate or distance yourself from the possibility of tuma coming about. Whereas ein drora de tuma, which is our case, is a case where we only deal with it after the fact. We don't deal with it in a preventative measure. We don't deal with it in an anticipatory manner before the instance of tuma. All right, so now the Gemara brings additional challenges to this view of Rav Huna. First of all, from the Braita that we just had. Meiteve, mahi mitama uchlim mashkim. What does she cause tuma to? That's what we just saw in our Braita. Uchlim in mashkim. My love, when it says uchlim mashkim, it doesn't define them. Ben bekodesh, ben betruma. Sounds like the uchlim mashkim are impactful both for kodesh and for truma. My answer is no, the Kodesh. Who says? It never says Truma over there. It just says Ochlim Mashkim. Maybe the Ochlim Mashkim that we're speaking about over there are Ochlim and Mashkim of Kodesh. And as Rashi explains over here, those are things like Shemen of the Menachot and the Yainim Nisachim, which are Nitkadesh B'Kli Cheres, and so therefore they have significance as being something that's Kodesh, as well as something that's considered to be an Ochel and a Mashkeh. And so that's the Shemen of Menachot and the Yainim Nisachim. That's what we're speaking about over here. Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Peshat Avaratan Melechol B'Truma. So later on in a Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that in addition to the checks, Shachrit and Arvit, that we demand of the woman each day, the institution that they should check in the mornings to clear out the tarot at night, and check at night to clear the tarot that she did during the day, so that a woman on a regular basis, every day, twice a day, would do a check to see if she was Tahora. Rabbi Yehuda adds on an additional time where she checks, which is when she finishes working with tarot. Shat Avartan, at the time that she finishes eating truma, she then checks herself immediately afterwards. And then we ask the question over there, whatever is done, meaning that she already ate it, and now she finds out she's a nida, what does finding out that she's a nida do for her at this point? There's nothing that she can do about it, she already ate the truma. So why would you do a check at that point? It's all historical fact now, there's no measure to be taken at this moment. Truth is that it might be useful to have the information to know whether you've done a violation and you need to do tshuva, but from a halachic standpoint to institute it doesn't necessarily make sense. So Amar Rav Chista, lo nitzrucha latakein shiraim shebefanah. The reason you need it is because of the residual truma that's still in front of her. The stuff that she has yet to eat, the things that she's in contact with, it's to help with that issue. And that is because if she does a check immediately after she's eaten, and sees that she is Tahora, and she's now been handling Truma, ate some of it, and left some of it over. Then she does a check that night, and she has a sighting of Dam. So at night, when she has the sighting of Dam, we're going to say retroactively, she was Tmeah from beforehand. If she does a check immediately after she has eaten the Truma, handled the Truma, then that blocks the retroactive Tuma from going beyond that point. That means the Truma that she ate, as well as the Truma that she dealt with, still remains fine because there is no retroactive Tuma because she had a check immediately afterwards. Had she not done a check immediately afterwards, and when she finds out she is Tmeah at night when she does the check, then retroactively to the previous check, which was in the morning, she'd have everything to be Tmeah, including the Truma she ate, which is Ma'da Hava Hava, is already done, but also the Truma that she handled, and that would be Tmeah. So in order to protect that Truma that she handled, then we say that she should do a check immediately afterwards, according to Rabbi Yehuda, so that any truma that she handled at that point in time will not be caught up in the tuma if she finds tuma later that day. But what's clear from this, according to this explanation, is that there is retroactive tuma with regards to truma, because the whole issue is truma over here, and we're saying the reason to do a check after she finished eating the truma and handling the truma is to protect that truma from retroactive problems that will happen if she has a sighting at the next check at the evening time. So that shows you that it's a problem of retroactive Tuma, and we're associated with Truma. So Ravuna, who is the author of this position that Mate Le'et only applies to Kodesh and not to Truma, Matni, he explains the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's position is Lishtrof Shiraim Shibiyadah. In order to burn up the remainder that's in her hand. It's not about a case of retroactive Tuma, but rather it's an issue of direct Tuma. When she checks herself, as Rashi says, the definition of shir veset means miyad, immediately. If she checks herself immediately upon eating the truma, handling the truma, then if she finds herself tmeah then, we assume she was definitely tmeah when she handled the truma, and that means the truma is now tuma vadait, and you would burn it. So it's not about a question of retroactive tuma to protect it from the check later on in the day, but rather it's an immediate impact, which is that when she checks now and she finds herself Tmeah, that's going to have implications for the Truma that she's handling right now. And that will make it Tmeah, and then she'll have to burn that to Truma. But it'll have no impact in terms of later in the day. This check's not going to protect the items from later in the day because it doesn't need to be protected. There is no retroactive Tuma by Truma, according to Rav Huna. And Tosafot says, obviously over here, we're not speaking about a full Bedikah,
because the bidika requires checking gum in the chorin and stakin, and that exceeds the time of shir veset, which means immediately afterwards. So the bidika we're speaking about here is kanchatzma. She wiped herself. She just did a quick check, and that's done miyad afterwards, and that can generate a necessity to be soreif, the truma, because it was done immediately afterwards. He does point out that if you do the longer bidika, it would have implications, not lisrof, but at least litlot. It would make it into a safek, because as we're going to see on later on the Masechta, that anytime you have time or duration between the check and the event, it generates a safek doraita with regards to the event that just took place. And so therefore, it could have been that explanation, but he wanted to explain it as lisrof, where you're burning it completely and it's vaday tamei, so that has to be a type of check that's a quick kancha, quick wiping, not a full check.
So tashma, masev asar rabbi ki Rabbi Eliezer. He had an incident where Rabbi paskined like Rabbi Eliezer. V'chashen iskar, after he remembered that the locha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, amar kedai hu Rabbi Eliezer lismoch ala b'shatat chak. Rabbi Eliezer is a good enough position to rely on in a difficult situation. So the machloket that's being referenced to over here is a machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim with regards to a woman who has yet to reach menopause, middle-aged woman, who has suddenly has a siluk damim. It goes for 90 days without having any sighting of dam. So she's established a chazaka that she has no sighting of dam. Then after that 90-day period, she suddenly has the sighting of dam. What is the status of that sighting of dam? Is that the same as a zakena? A woman is in menopause, and when she hits menopause, since she doesn't regularly have dam anymore, sightings of dam, any sighting of dam is a prospective tuma, dayashata, there is no retroactive tuma. So maybe similar here. A woman who's gone through 90 days, three periods, where she has not seen dam, that's a chazaka of not seeing dam. So then when she has a sighting of dam, maybe so too over there, dayashata. That's the view of Rabbi Eliezer, that there is no tuma retroactively in that case, because she's no different than a woman who's hit menopause. The Chachamim disagree and say, a woman who's hit menopause is misuleket damim. She doesn't expect to see dam. And therefore, this is just a corroboration of her biological status, which is that she's reached an age where she shouldn't cite dam. And now we have a period of time where she doesn't cite the dam. She becomes a misuleket damim. And therefore, she has a citing afterwards. It's unusual. It's out of the ordinary. And therefore, it's dayashata. But over here, a middle-aged woman who just has misuleket damim, we can't biologically assume that that's going to be the case or it's going to remain that way. It's an oddity. And that oddity is going to reverse, so we know she's going to see dam. Therefore, she's considered to be like a woman who has a normal sighting. And therefore, if she has a sighting, she's going to be tmeah, may 8 to 8, retroactively, like any other woman has a sighting of dam. That's the machlok of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. So, an individual came to Rabbi with this exact shaila, a woman who had been misuleket damim 90 days without any dam. She was working with tarot, or she came into contact with tarot right before she had a sighting of dam. So if you believe there's a problem retroactively, all the tarot are problematic. If you believe it's dayashata, that's prospective tuma, then the tarot she dealt with are fine. So that's exactly the question we're coming before Rabbi, and he paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, that's dayashata, and all the tarot are fine. After he remembered that halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, and he should have paskin like the Chachamim, he said, kedai, Rabbi Eliezer, to be sumechala b'shatat chak, in a difficult situation. Rashi, over here, says, the shatat chak was shnei batzoret ayu. It was the years of famine. And in years of famine, we know that the chachamim were much more makio with regards to tarot, because of the limited amount of food that was available to individuals. So then, if we start instituting this retroactive tuma, it's going to limit the scope of what you can eat in a situation where there's already limited produce and limited availability of food. So therefore, in a shatat chak v'shnei batzoret, he says, in that situation, we can rely on Rabbi Eliezer. The Baal Tosafot don't love that explanation of Rashi, because they say that a shnei batzoret, even the Chachamim agree that dayashata, that they don't believe there's made late tuma in a shnei batzoret, and therefore you wouldn't have to just rely on Rabbi Eliezer, you could rely on the Chachamim. The Tosafot says that that's not the shatat chak over here. Shatat chak is one of two issues. Either the individual asked the question already left, and it'd be too much trouble, or it's too difficult to catch up with them, and therefore we can't reverse the psak. And that's why we say, oh, kedai Rabbi Lezer b'shatat chak, to rely on, because the shatat chak is we can't get the individual back who we paskin for in order to tell them the psak was incorrect. Or the other possibility of the shatat chak is that originally there was a small amount of tarot that were dealt with before this psak. After the psak, the individual then dealt with a large grouping of tarot. whatever was now tamei or could have been tamei retroactively by this woman is considered tahor. And then an individual did tarot, say for instance on a bed that the woman had sat on in the last 24 hours. He does a ton of tarot on the bed after the psak of Rabbi. Now if Rabbi's to reverse the psak, he's going to cause a huge loss to this individual based on his mistaken psak. So that's where he says, Kedai Rabbi Eliezer to be sumech alav b'shat adchak. Shat adchak is here that after the fact, the psak caused the possibility of there being huge losses if we don't maintain the psak. And that's what it means, it's a shat adchak, is that we're going to maintain the psak because otherwise, if we reverse the psak was then a cause for tremendous losses. Rahavinambai, Mala Karshaniskar. What did he remember? I mean that either the locha is like Rabbi Eliezer or it's not like Rabbi Eliezer. What does it mean that he remembered? If he then remembered the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, elik rabbanon, but rather like the rabbanon, shatat chak, heki abin kabatei. Then how does he paskin like him even in shatat chak? Rashi says over here a very interesting term. If it's somebody who argues on him, betelim divrei yachid or betelim divrei, the person that we don't paskin like. So that it's not like there are two opinions here, and therefore you can rely on the minority opinion. Once we paskin like one opinion, the other opinion is as if it doesn't exist. And then you can't go out and revive that opinion all of a sudden. So how is he reviving Rabbi Eliezer, even a shatat chak? Ela must be dloit mer yokota lokimar velokimar. The locha was not paskin, not like the chachamim, not like Rabbi Eliezer. There was no definitive psak that was given. The kevin shiniskar, the lav yachid palig alei. And he mistakenly thought that the machloket was between Rabbi Eliezer and another Tano, and therefore he paskin like Rabbi Eliezer over that other Tano. But then he remembered the lav yachid palegale. It wasn't an individual Tano that was arguing with him. Rabbim. It was a chachamim. It was a majority plegale that argued on him. And we know the principle yachid rabbim halacha ki rabbim. Then that's when Rabbi said damar kedaihu Rabbi Eliezer lismochel abishat atchak. And in a difficult situation, we can rely on Rabbi Eliezer. Now again, that seemingly is difficult as well, because that's klalei apsak, where you have a rabim and a yachid, halacha ki rabim. And Rashi says that when you have halacha ki rabim, betelim divrei yachid. The individual's position is null and void, like the case where we paskin like one position over another position. So then he had remorse that he had paskin that way, but he remembered, that was a rabim yachid, he wanted to relent on the psak. But then he says, b'shatat chak, we can rely on Rabbi Eliezer. So what's interesting that derives from this is that even though the klali apsak are that yachid rabim, halacha kerabim, that's not considered to be a definitive psak where we eliminate or the individual who is the minority opinion doesn't exist at all. Because that's only true when we have a definitive psak given by the Gemara. And in that psak halacha, that makes it that one opinion exists and the other one does not exist. But rather, when you use klalei apsak, it just tells you a way to be machriya between the opinions, but both opinions still exist. And so even though the right way to go is to paskin like the rabim, that does not necessarily mean that the yachid is gone begamre. And that's why Rabbi Eliezer can be relied on b'shat ha-techak. The Gemara says, iyamart b'shlama de truma. If this whole incident was speaking about truma, hainu dave truma b'mei rabbi. Rabbi is at the end of the period of Tanaim. He's long after Churban HaBayit. And so if you're speaking about Truma, then the whole incident and the whole issue that arose could be an issue of Truma. And that would be sensible. Eliyamart leKodesh, if you say that the whole discussion here revolves around Kodesh, Kodesh be made Rabbi miAvayit. Since when was there Kodesh in the time of Rabbi? According to Rav Huna, this Me'it Le'et, or the whole issue Me'it Le'et, is only relevant in the world of Kodesh. And if Rabbi is giving psak halacha that revolves around whether it's prospective or retroactive tuma, that means that he's paskining about things that must be relevant in his time. And the only thing that is extant in his time is truma, not kodesh. Now, whether this truma is only truma midrabanan, truma de oraita, would depend on what you think the correlation is between the issues of the mikdash versus the issues of the aretz. And whether Kedushat Aretz can be permanent even without Kedushat HaMikdash or vice versa, or even if they're correlated, maybe they both still exist. That's the machloket about Kedusha Rishona, Kedusha Shnia, and Kedushat Aretz that we've discussed many, many times. And also would relate to the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Lamed Vav, whereby Rabbi over there, when he instituted Prusbol, the Gemara says over there that it was because that Shmita was only Midrabanan, and the
machloge between Rashi and the Balei Tosafot over there as to what that means with regards to Yovel, Shemitah, and the implications of when is Shemitah or Mitzvah Tluya Baretz considered to be Doraita or Derabanan. All of that would play into the factors here, even though in this instance it may not make a difference because over here the Tumah Me'eleit would be impactful both on Truma Midorabanan as well as Truma Midoraita. So the Gemara answers, Kedula. It's similar to the instance of Ula, Damar Ula. Ula gives testimony to the fact that Chavraya Midkan Migalila, that the Chaverim in the Galil used to keep their Shemen and Yayin Al Tarata Kodesh. As Rashi explains over here, it's a beautiful idea that the Chaverim Shvigalim Mitarim Yenam Lissachim Ushmanam Linvachot Shema Yibaneh Beit HaMikdash B'Yameyim. It's because maybe the Beit HaMikdash will be built in their day and they will have their stuff ready in order to be brought to the Mikdash. So it's a tremendous belief in that Mashiach can come any day and the Beit HaMikdash could return at any moment. And in order to be ready, they used to do their, or prepare their Yayin Al Tarata Kodesh. So, even though Ula, who's an Amora, clearly leaves after the Churban HaBayit, there are still individuals or groups of individuals who are practicing Tuman Dara at the level of Kodesh. Achanami, so too, Bimei Rabbi, it was the same thing. It could be that the instance or the issue at hand was not an issue of Truma, it was an issue of Kodesh. And the Kodesh was not real Kodesh, but it was stuff that was done Al Tarata Kodesh, like we see in the time of Ula. So even though there was no Beit HaMikdash, there were still people keeping Chulin Al Tarata Kodesh, which would then have relevance in this issue of retroactive Tuma, and that's what Rabbi was poskening about.
And obviously it would seem from here that they had a mechanism for getting Tahor, which would imply that they had access to the Efer Parah Duma that must have been in place before the Churban HaBayit. But that's interesting only because we're dealing with a period of time that's significantly after the Churban HaBayit, and they're still having practices of Tumah and Tara. You have to say the same thing with regards to the Truma that we were discussing before, as well as if you're discussing this issue of Chulin Al Tarata Kodesh over here, where these individuals are maintaining those types of halachot of Tumah and Tara.
Tashma, Maseh B'Shivkato Shel Rabban Gamliel. There was an incident with the maidservant of Rabban Gamliel, Shaita Ofa Kikarot Shel Truma. She was baking loaves of bread of Truma. Ben kol achat v'achat, between each one of the loaves that she worked with, medicha yadea b'mayim, she washed her hands, ubodeket, and she checked herself to see if she was in nida. Ba'achrona, on the last kikar badka, she checked herself afterwards, umatza tamei'a, and she found herself to be tamei tumat nida. Uvat v'shala et Rabban Gamliel. She brought the shayla to her master, Rabban Gamliel. Bamarla, kulan tmeyot. He said to her that all of the kikarot that she worked with retroactively are tmeyot. Amralo, she says back to him, Rabbi, halo b'dika haitali ben kol achat v'achat. Didn't I do a check between each one of them? Shouldn't that then protect the earlier kikarot? Amrala, im kain, hi tmeya, v'kulan teorot. Then only the last one is tmeya. The remainder of them are teorot. Now, tani mihat, the incident here is with kikarot shel truma. And you see that Rabban Gamliel, had it not been that the Shivcha had done the checks in between each one of the Kikarot, he was ready to be mitamei all the Kikarot retroactively because of the sighting at the end. So you see there is retroactive Tuma by Truma. And that's what the Gemara says over here. Tani miyat Kikarot shel Truma. My answer is my Truma. The Truma that we're speaking about here are Trumat Lachmei Todah. That they were the Lachamim of a Todah. And it was the Truma of the Lachmei Todah. Where it says, Trumat Lachmei Todah, Bafia, my Bayah. What does this woman, this Shivcha, have anything to do with the baking of the Lachmei Todah? Because the way that it works is that you bake the 40 chalot of the Lachmei Todah, and after they are baked, you take one from each type. There are four different types of chalot, 10 of each, and you take one of each of them, and that's given as Truma to the Kohen. So then, this Shivcha, what does she have to do with the baking of the Truma Lachmei Todah?
Because the Truma Lachmei Todah is only taken off after the baking of the Chalot. And so then why is she dealing with it now, in the point when it's an Isa, when it's still a dough?
So So the answer of the Gemara is Dafreshino Belishayu. She separated them out at the time she was kneading them. Tiha Damarav Tuvi by Rav Katina, similar to the instance of Rav Tuvi by Rav Katina or by Rav Kisna, Lachmei Toda Shafan Dalet Chalot. If you have Lachmei Toda that were baked as four chalot, yatsa, it works, it's okay. Vavinan ba, Vahabinan Arbaim. Don't you need 40 loaves? So how can four be sufficient in this case? It says the mitzvah. Yeah, 40 is the chatchila way to do it, but b'diavad, you can do four. Vahabinan afrishay truma minayu. What about the fact that you have to give one of each type to the Kohen? How are you going to be mafrish that to the Kohen? V'chitayimed the mafrish prusa mikol chad v'chad, no problem. You'll just break off a piece that's one-tenth of each one of these chalot, and you'll hand it to the Kohen. The problem is, echad amar rachmana, shloi tel prusa. The Torah says that you give one to the Kohen, that means a whole one, not a portion of one. So you can't give him a piece that was broken off of a larger chalot. So if that's the case, how can you bake the 40 different chalot of the Todah as four? Meaning instead of baking 10 of each type, you bake one big one of each type. That's not going to work. Because then how do you mafrish the truma, the lachmei todah, to give to the Kohen? Because when you break a piece off each one of them, that's a prusa, not a whole one, and you need to give a whole one to the Kohen. And the answer that we gave is, v'amrina dafreshino b'lishayu. It's a case where they separated out at the time of kneading. So when he was making these four big units, one of each type, he pulled off one-tenth of it and baked it separately. So therefore, it's not a prusa, it's a whole piece. He has four very large pieces, which represent 9/10 of each min. And then 1/10 of each min, he baked as a separate piece. And then that piece is given to the Kohen. But you see here that you can be mafrish, the lachmei todah that go to the Kohen, which is the truma of the lachmei todah. That can be done at the time of lisha, the time of kneading. And that's what's happening here as well with the shivcha of Rabban Gamliel. If you want to explain that, it's not speaking about real truma, but rather truma of lachmei todah. Then that's happening at the time of Lisha, because she's not going to be the one who's going to be baking these lachmei todah, because that's done in the Mikdash. That's also done at the time that they're going to be shochet the zebach, in order that it's karum panav, that the outside is crusted over at the time they do the shechita to be mikadesh them. And even though it's not kadosh until karum panav batanur nishkat alav zebach, nevertheless, the Balei Tosfot say, since you already segregated it out at the time of kneading, it takes on a shame of being trumat lachmei todah, and it even speculates to the point where you can't change it anymore. If that's what you designated to be the trumat lachmei todah, then you can't alter it or exchange it with another one of the chalot. And as Tosfot points out over here, shivkato shrav gamliel perish rashbam dainu rav gamliel azakein. This has to be rav gamliel azakein. Because otherwise, it would not be at the time of the Beit HaMikdash. It's clear that the Lachmei Todah are only relevant during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And Rav Gamliel HaZaken lives at the time of the Beit HaMikdash being around. That is that we have a number of Rabban Gamliels. You have Hillel HaZaken, who has a grandson, who is Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken. That Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken has a grandson that is Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. He is the Rabbi Gamliel who lives through the Churban HaBayit. And then the grandson of Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne is Rabbi, the Mesader HaMishnah. And then Rabbi, the Mesader HaMishnah, has a son. His oldest son is named as Rabban Gamliel. That's the third Rabban Gamliel. Then after that, there's also a number of Rabban Gamliels in the Amoraim. So what the Balei Tosafot quote from the Rishbam is that we're speaking about here is Rabban Gamliel as a Cain, who clearly lived during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Although Tosafot at the end says, usually when it references to Rabbi Gamliel as a Cain, the Gemara notes that it's Rabban Gamliel as a Cain, doesn't call him Stam Rabban Gamliel. And therefore, it's possible that this is a reference to Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, who's a peer of Rabbi Eliezer, and who lives through the Churban, so it's possible that this is an instance or a case prior to the Churban, when he was alive before the Churban. So that's also a possibility that it's not Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, but rather Rabban Gamliel of Yavne. And now the Gemara moves on to the next proof. Tashma, Shuv Maaseh B'Shivcha Shel Rabban Gamliel. Another incident with the maidservant of Rabban Gamliel. Shaita Naf Gafa Chaviot Shel Yain. She was sealing barrels of wine. Be'ekel Achat V'Achat Medicha Yadea B'Mayim. Between each one of them, she washed her hands. Budeket, and checked herself to see if she was a nida. Ubachrona badka umatza. And in the last barrel, after she did the sealing, she checked and she was a nida. Ubat Bishala the Rabban Gamliel. She went and asked Rabban Gamliel what should be the psak in this case. Ramala kulam tmeot. And he said to her, all of them are tmeot. Amralo, valo bidika, haita li ben kolachat vechat. I did a check between each one of them. So Ramalaim Kane, he tmeyah kulan torot. If that's the case, then only the last one is tmeyah. All the others are torot. And again here, if it had been that she didn't do the check, it's clear that Rabban Gamliel would have assigned the tuma retroactively. Now in this instance, it doesn't say what the yayin is. It doesn't say if it's yayin of kodesh or yayin of truma. So the Gemara says, "Iamart bishlama chada de kodesh vechada de truma." If you say this latter case is dealing with kodesh and the previous case was dealing with truma, hainu de hadra b'shailo. That's why she went and asked Rabban Gamliel again the same question. The first time she asked the question, it was about truma. Then he gave her an answer. Then when she went back to him, she asked the question because it was about kodesh. And if it was kodesh, maybe there's chumrot, or maybe there's elevated status of kedusha that would have another din. And therefore, she didn't want to apply the din she had heard by truma to kodesh. Eliyamart, idividi, the kodesh, we say both of them are speaking about kodesh, because you explained before that truma means trumat lachmei todah. And over here, you're going to say this is speaking about kodesh as well. Lamalal mahadar vilshailo. Why did she have to go back and ask the same question again? Because she would have known the din. And it's the exact same din again. And she could apply the din that she had heard from Gamliel the previous time without having to go and ask a shayla about it. So Gemara says, Maisa shaya b'shtei shfachot haya, that the incident was not the same maidservant of Rabbi Gamliel, was a different maidservant. So each one of them asked because the other one wasn't aware of what the first shifcha had asked. And that's why they asked. And maybe they were both about kodesh. And therefore it does not undermine Ravuna's position. Lishna achrina amrilo. There is an alternative view here, which is Amravuna made the eight shibidina mitama ben the kodesh ben the truma. So over here, Ravuna's statement is that made the eight has implications both for kodesh and for truma, not just for kodesh, but rather for kodesh and truma. So now all these questions we asked before are not going to be questions anymore. They're going to be supportive of this idea that has application by truma. Mimai, how do you know that's the case? Milugo kanela gabi malo. And one of the proofs that we have is before we question why wasn't it found by the chumrot of kodesh over truma in chagiga, and then we gave an answer, whatever the answer was. But now, that's evidence of the fact that this difference doesn't exist, because it should have been written there. Don't we have a braita that says that it's only applicable by kodesh and not by truma, which means that they have a tanaic work that's saying that there is a limitation made to kodesh and not truma. How could we have Ravuna, who's an amora, telling us that it applies also to kodesh? It's interesting that Gemara didn't bring this braita before as a support for Rav Huna's position in the previous Gemara. Kabla minei Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak. Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak got this question from Rav Nachman, meaning he got the braita, he had a mesora of the braita from Rav Nachman, and he answered the following: Bechulin shenasu atarat kodesh, velo bechulin shenasu atarat truma. He says that the braita's implication is not about kodesh and truma. It's about chulin that was done al tarat kodesh, or chulin that was done al tarat truma, which is that Rav Huna's statement is that made late has application both by truma and kodesh. That's real truma and real kodesh. The braita is saying that it only has application by kodesh is chulin shenasu al tarat kodesh. There it has application the retroactive truma, but chulin shenasu al tarat truma, it does not have retroactive implications for it's not hatam. We have a Mishnah in Chala. Nolada safek tuma ad shelo galgala. There was a safek tuma before she kneaded the dough. And obviously, this would have to be a safek tuma that has implications for chulin and not just for truma or chala. Taseh bituma. Then she can do it or continue to work it bituma. Mish galgala taseh bitara. Once she already has done the gilgul, has done the kneading of the item, and therefore it's susceptible to problems of tuma because it's already elevated to the status of truma. Chala has a status like truma. So therefore, before you reach the point where you're chayevin and chala, then it's chulin, and you have a safek of tuma, then you can do it bituma and not worry about it because there's no issue or no problem with being mitamei chulin. On the other hand, once you've reached the point of chiyuv chala, that means that you're dealing with something that's truma. And even if you have a safek tuma, we don't give you the right or grant you the right to then to be mitameit bivadai. And you still have to treat it like it's truma tohora. And therefore, you have to deal with it as if it's tahor. That's what's being said here, which is, and as the Mishnah explains now, ad shelo gagala, before the time of kneading, tase betuma, the reason you do it betuma is chulin inhu. Because at that point, it's chulin. It has yet to reach the point where you're chayav in chala, umutar the grom tuma, the chulin, sheberet Yisrael. And we believe, at least in this Mishnah, that it's okay to cause tuma to chulin in Eretz Yisrael. There is obviously a dissenting view that you cannot cause tuma to chulin sheberet Yisrael, but it's clear that this Mishnah believes that it's fine. Therefore, if you have a safek in tuma, you can continue to do it, or you can be metameh it intentionally at that point, because you are still at the point of chulin, and since it's chulin, you can be metameh it. So if it's a safek tuma, you could even make it into vadai tuma. Mishigalgala, once she's already kneaded it, tase b'tahara. She has to continue to do it b'tahara, even though now there's a safek tuma. Because chulin, hatvulin l'chala. He has yet to separate out the chala yet, but nevertheless, this is chulin that is tevel. Mixed inside of this chulin is chala, and chulin mitukanim. So chulin hatvulin l'chala, ki chala damu. We treat chulin that has chala embedded in it as if the chala is already extant. Basur legrom tuma l'chala. And there is no right, or you don't have a right, to cause tuma to chala. Now, even in a case where there's already a safek tuma, not only when it's tahor can you not do it, but even if there's a safek tuma, because of the drush, as Rashi brings over here, of mishmeret trumotai, b'shtei trumot ha-kaduv medaber, achat truma torah, v'achat truma tluya. Doesn't matter whether it's truma that is vadai tahor, or it's truma that has a safek associated with it, you're not allowed to cause tuma to it. And that's why over here, you can't cause tuma to it once you've already passed the threshold of kneading, because this isa is already chayevet in chala. Tana v'chalata tluya. The chalata that comes out of this is tluya, means it's a safek. Lo ochlim v'lo sorfim. You cannot eat it, but you also cannot burn it. So I'm going to stop here, because the Gemara is going to continue and try to discuss or discover what the safek is. We just got the basics of the Mishnah down. The Gemara is going to continue to try to understand what the Mishnah meant when there was a safek tuma over here. What type of safek tuma are we speaking about? All right, we're going to stop here on the top of Zion Amud Aleph.